Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jaya Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivirajakacharya Astotra Sri Stotrishat Srimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramhamsa Parivarajakacharya Stotrishat Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarind ki Namacharya Haridas Thakur ki Prem se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivaswati Gaur Bhaktavarind ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinada Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki Vrindavan Matratam ki Navadip Mayapur Dham ki, Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Ganga Mai Yamuna Mai ki, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande, all glorious to the simple devotees, all glorious to the simple devotees, all glorious to the simple devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glorious to Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Narancheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So today we are reading from Canto number 3, the status quo, chapter 20, Conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, and verse number 1. Shaunaka uvacha Mahim pratishtam adyasya Mahim pratishtaham adyasya Saute svayambhuvo manuhu Saute svayambhuvo manuhu Kani avashtita dhatvarani Kani avashtita dvarani Margayavara janmanam Margayavara janmanam Shaunaka uvacha Mahim pratishtaha madhyasya Saute svayambhuvo manuhu Kani avashtita dvarani Margayavara janmanam
కాని అవష్టిష ద్వారాని మార్గాయ వరజన శౌనికవాస మహిమ ప్రతిష్ట మాత్ర మహిం ప్రతిష్టా మాత్యస్య శౌనకః శౌనక ఉవాచ సెడ్ మహిం ది ఎర్త్ ప్రతిష్టాహం సిచ్యువేటెడ్ ఆద్యస్య హ్యావింగ్ సెక్యూర్డ్ సౌతే ఓ సుత గోస్వామి స్వయంభువ స్వయంభువ మనుః మను కాని వాట్ అవష్టితాత్ పర్ఫార్మ్డ్ ద్వారాని వేస్ మార్గాయ టు గెట్ అవుట్ ఆవర లేటర్ జన్మనాం ఆఫ్ దోస్ టు బి బోర్న్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసి భక్తివేంద్ర స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్. శ్రీ శౌనక ఇంక్వైర్డ్, ఓ సుత గోస్వామి, ఆఫ్టర్ ద ఎర్త్ వాస్ అగైన్ సిచ్యువేటెడ్ ఇన్ ఇట్స్ ఆర్బిట్, what did Swayambhuva Manu do to show the path of liberation to persons who were to take birth later on? Purport: the appearance of the Lord as the first boar incarnation occurred during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, whereas the present age is in the period of Vaivashvata Manu. Each Manu's period lasts 72 times the cycle of four ages, and one cycle of ages equals 432,000 solar years. Thus, 420,000 times 72 solar years is the reign of one Manu. In each Manu's period, there are many changes in many ways, and there are 14 Manus within one day of Brahma. It is understood here that Manu creates scriptural regulations for the salvation of the conditioned souls who come to the material world for material enjoyment. The Lord is so kind that any soul who wants to enjoy in this material world is given full facility for enjoyment, and at the same time he is shown the path of salvation. Shaunaka Rishi therefore inquired from Suta Goswami, what did Swayambhuva Manu do after the reinstatement of the earth in its orbital situation? Thus ends the purport. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Ena Bhutale Swayambhurupaka Damayam Tadati Swapadantikam వందేహం శ్రీగురో శ్రీయుతపదకమలం శ్రీగూరూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగర జాతం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజన సహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపాదాన్ సహగణలలిత శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్తకాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసతి గౌరభక్తవృంద
హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే. సో వెల్కమ్ ఎవ్రీవన్ ఫర్ టుడేస్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్లాస్ అండ్ థ్యాంక్ యూ ఫర్ గివింగ్ మీ దిస్ ఆపర్చునిటీ. సో టుడే విల్ బి స్టార్టింగ్ ద న్యూ చాప్టర్. ద నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ద చాప్టర్ ఈస్ కన్వర్సేషన్ బిట్వీన్ మైత్రేయ అండ్ విదుర. సో ఇన్ ద ప్రీవియస్ చాప్టర్ వీ హ్యావ్ సీన్ ద కిల్లింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద డీమన్ హిరణ్యాక్ష అండ్ ఇన్ దిస్ చాప్టర్ ద కన్వర్సేషన్ బిట్వీన్ మైత్రేయ అండ్ విదుర కంటిన్యూస్. The previous chapter is also a conversation, now which is further continues into discussing further topics. So in this verse basically Shravanaka, he inquires from Suta Goswami that, you know, now that, you know, this planet Earth was saved from the demon Hiranyaksha and it has been situated in its back in its original position. So after that, what happened? What did the Swayambhuva Manu do after that, especially for those people who are yet to take birth? And in the purport, Prabhupada mentions about different Manus and how and what is the like lifespan of each Manu and what does each Manu do, like, you know, giving the scriptural regulations for the salvation of conditioned souls. And also Prabhupada describes about how the Lord is so kind that he provides the facility for the material enjoyments. At the same time, he also shows the path of salvation. So that's why this question was asked, that what did Swayambhuva Manu do after the reinstatement of the earth in its orbital position? So today, we will discuss a little bit more about this purport. So, here, of course, obviously, the first thing is that there is a description of the Manu. Manu is like, he's the father of the mankind, and there is a description about Manu, his lifespan and his activities. And, of course, especially a detailed explanation of the Manus is further elaborated in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, where you have a more detailed explanation about each Manu, and, you know, what are those different activities. So, and we also find reference to Manus throughout the Bhagavatam at different places. This, you know, the topic of Manu comes, you know, quite often. So a question may be raised that, you know, how is this relevant, right? I mean, why is the Manu is being described in the various places of Bhagavatam? And especially, you know, this significant portion of the Bhagavatam is dedicated towards explaining the activities of Manu. So why is it so? Because we all know that this Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled by Sri Vyasadeva is primarily to glorify the Supreme Lord, correct? He was not satisfied even after composing all this Vedic literature. And upon the instruction of his guru, Narada Muni, Vyasadeva has composed his literature, Bhagavatam, primarily to glorify the Lord. So if it is only about the glorification of the Lord, then why, I mean, how is this descriptions about Manu, about the creation, about the dissolution, all these like technical things, how is this relevant in the Bhagavatam? Of course, one obvious answer would be, in the last Sunday, Prabhupada was talking about how that, you know, devotees, you know, also hear about their, not only the Lord, but also the Lord's devotees, right? Tadyanam, you know, Aradhanam, that anything which is connected to Krishna also is Krishna, and then devotees would, you know, relish in hearing those pastimes. Just like, you know, like Kurukshetra is basically a battle between two brothers, but still, because it involves Arjuna, who is a devotee, and Krishna. So that is why the devotees also will take interest. So that's one reason that why, you know, all these topics are being discussed. However, a question may be raised that why specifically Manu? Why? Because there may be so many other things which is related to the Supreme Lord, but why specifically about Manu? The reason is because we all know that Srimad Bhagavatam is called as Mahapurana, correct? Srimad Bhagavatam is Mahapurana, and for Srimad Bhagavatam to be called as a Mahapurana, in the Matsya Purana, it is explained that there should be 5 characteristics. For any literary work to be considered as a Mahapurana, they should have 5 characteristics. It is said that a history is called as a Purana if it has 5 defining characteristics. Otherwise, it is called as Akhyana. And of course, these basically the Puranas are further classified based on Sattva, you know, Raja and Tamoguna that is there. And what are these 5 topics? The 5 subject matters of a Purana are basically creation, dissolution, genealogy,
the period and reign of Manus and the activities of illustrious kings and enlightened sages appearing within the great dynasties. So that is the reason why all these five topics are elaborately described in the Srimad Bhagavatam for it to be characterized as a Mahapurana. And especially, actually not only five, but actually Bhagavatam has 10 topics. It's just not only five. Then when you discuss 10 topics, then that is when a Purana becomes Mahapurana. If it's only discussing about just only five topics, then it's just called as a Upapurana or a small Purana. And Srimad Bhagavatam is considered as a Mahapurana. And there are basically 18 Mahapuranas and there are 18 Upapuranas. And Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the Mahapurana. So here you can see what are the 10 topics which every Mahapurana describes about. So as you can see, there is Sarga, Visarga, Sthana, Poshana, Uti, and Manvantara, like this, so on and so forth. Like there are 10 topics that every Mahapurana discusses about. And the current topic, which is about discussing about Manu, is also one of the 10 topics, which is Manvantara. It's the topic number 6, as you can see here, basically describes about the change of Manus. Of course, even the Upapuranas also, even though it only describes about 5, but it actually talks about all 10, but the primary emphasis is only given upon only on these 5 things, which is creation, dissolution, genealogy, reigns of Manu, and history of various sages. And of course, these 10 things which characterizes a Mahapurana, I mean, these are not like independent things. No, these are not like independent things which has nothing to do with each other. Basically, these 9 things there is a connection between each other topic. And ultimately, all these 9 subjects which will ultimately tie into the last subject, which is Ashraya, which is describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is why this first 9 is basically, they are called as Ashrita. And the 10th one is called as Ashraya. So these 9 topics are basically there to describe the final topic, which is Ashraya. So Ashraya means which is, supported, and which is giving the support, and the Ashrita means which is being supported by the Ashraya. So in this way, these 9 topics are meant to understand the ultimate topic, which is the Ashraya, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for example, let's say that if you want to study the sun, right? Let's say you want to study the sun. So it's just not enough that you understand the sun is a source of sunlight. No, that is okay, but that is not a complete understanding of the sun. But you understand, for you to understand a comprehensive understanding of a sun, if you understand the sun, its origin, its time period, who is ruling, how the different chemical reactions are happening in the sun, all so on and so forth, then that's a comprehensive understanding of the sun. Similarly, for us to understand the Ashraya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these 9 topics will help us to get a comprehensive understanding of the Supreme Lord. Correct? However, let's say that we understand these 9 topics, but if we do not understand this 10th topic, which is Ashraya, then our education is actually incomplete. For example, in the Chandogya Upanishad, when the son of this sage, Shvetarka, I think his name is, when he goes and studies a Vedic education and he comes back to his father, the father will ask, "My dear son, what did you study?" He will ask basically, "My dear son, did you study that thing by knowing which you will know everything?" Then the son replied that, "I studied different things. Like, I studied the, Vyakarana, Nyaya, logic, Chandas, Sanskrit grammar, everything. But I did not study this thing what you are referring to. Like, by understanding one thing, you'll understand everything. No, I did not study that." Then the father said that means that your education is incomplete. Basically, it is referring to the final and ultimate thing, which is Ashraya. So unless a person understands the final feature, which is Bhagavan feature, even after understanding all these 9 subject matters, then his education is considered as incomplete. But whereas, if a person even doesn't understand these 9 topics perfectly, but if he understands the final topic, which is Ashraya, then his education is basically can be considered as a complete. And that is what his modern education is all about, But the modern education, it only talks about these first 9 topics, like, about the creation, about the dissolution, about all the scientific things. But it doesn't discuss about the ultimate thing, which is Ashraya. Then this education cannot be considered as the complete education. But however, but still,
But why about Manu specifically? Again, the question remains that, okay, these 10 things are required and one of the things is Manu. But why Manu? Why specifically Manu? And the explanation for that is of course, we can see that, you know, there's a detailed description of Manu, that how in one day of Brahma there are 1,000 cycles of four yugas, and in 1,000 cycles there are 14 Manus. That means 1,000 divided by 14, which gives you, like, each Manu gets around, like, 72 yuga cycles. And each Manu is basically, whenever it's a new Manu, then he is basically assisted by different demigods like Chandra, Varuna, Indra, you know, the seven great sages, the Saptarishi, and so on. And currently, we can see here in the chart, as Prabhupada mentions, that we are currently under the seventh Manu. And this pastime of the Varaha actually happened in the one of the previous Manus. And specifically speaking, we are actually on the 20th cycle, 20th yoga cycle of the day of Brahma, and that is called as Shweta Varaha Kalpa. So the reason why the Manu is described is because, specifically the activities of Manu is described is because it is said that Manavadi Acharna Kadanena Sad Dharma Evatra Vaivakshita Itiyardam. The activities of Manu are described because they delineate the true nature of Sad Dharma. Because Manu, being one of the 12 Mahajanas, you know, he basically delineates, his activities delineates what is the real, what is actually the true Dharma. Because this Dharma, actually this Dharma is of twofold. It is said here that Dvividohi Vedokta Dharmaha Pravritti Lakshana Nivritti Lakshanascha. Means this Vedic path, this Dharma is actually twofold. The first one is called as Pravritti Marga and the next one is called as Nivritti Marga. And that is how even Prabhupada also mentions in his purport that the Lord provides both. He gives the facilities for the material enjoyment. At the same time, he also shows the path of salvation. So there are both. The Vedic path is twofold. It has both the Pravritti Marga and also the Nivritti Marga. And the Lord sends, you know, different people, like, you know, like for example, Prajapatis, to show the Pravritti Marga. And at the same time, the Lord also sends the great sages like the four Kumaras to show the humanity the Nivritti Marga also, the path of salvation, the path of renunciation also. That is why the Swayambhu, that is why this inquiry was made that, okay, now that the earth is back in its position, then what did the Manu do for the, you know, for those generations which are not yet taken birth? That how is Manu showing the path of Dharma to the future upcoming generations? So further discussing about this Pravritti and Nivritti Marga, you know, both are required, you know, for the creation. For it to be, you know, functioning harmoniously, both the Pravritti and the Nivritti Marga are required. So Pravritti Marga essentially deals it with external life. It more deals with the external life, you know, like leading like a moral and religious and pious life, you know, not committing any sinful activities. It's like that. Because everybody has some desires to fulfill, correct? That is why they are in this material world. The reason why these individuals are in this material world is they have some material desires. They want to fulfill those material desires that, you know, they either want to, you know, be successful, become rich, or, you know, acquire a lot of wealth, or they want to become famous, or so on and so forth. Now, how does being religious help? Correct? I mean, if a person wants to attain so many material enjoyment, how does it help for a person to be religious? Because when a person is religious, when a person follows the Dharma, and when he believes in the God, and when he believes in the law of karma, then what happens is that even though, you know, he's trying to satisfy his material desires, but he will satisfy his desires in a, let's say, like a pious way, not like in a sinful way or like in an exploitative mentality, and in a more sustainable way, so that, you know, there is more of a harmonious, you know, harmony between all the other living entities as well. And that is why, that is where the Manu, he introduces his various scriptural injunctions, you know, various scriptural injunctions. It's like a law book, like, you know, Manu gives Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita is like a law book, so that where everybody lives harmoniously. And that is more about, you know, Pravritti Marga, that how you live in a harmonious life. And otherwise what happens, that then that will lead to a, you know, hellish life. You know, for example, whenever there is like a financial disaster, you know, of course they may give like various reasons, like, you know, they may give reasons like, oh, this is something like systematic failure, or this is like a policy failure, or they may give different reasons for an economical failure. But the root cause of all the failures, economic failures, is nothing but greed. nothing more than that. That is why in the Wall Street there is a saying, IBG and YBG. Did anyone hear this word? IBG and YBG means I will be gone and you will be gone. That's what it says. Means it's like a philosophical thing, but it's nothing philosophy in there. What it means is that, okay, I got my commission by selling you something and you got your commission by buying something for somebody else. So we both are happy. You don't need to care about what are the consequences of our action. No. As long as we got our commission, we are fine. So just leave it like that. So that is a mentality. It's a greed. So that is what happens, you know, when the people, when there is no ethical and moral values in the society. And, you know, that's sort of hellish life you can see. So the first thing is that there should be a pravritti marga where people act piously and people act in a moral way and in an ethical way. But however, at some point of time, the people will realize that, see, this life is not just about like leading an ethical or a moral life. There is something which is beyond it. There is something which is more spiritual about it. Then that is when a person eligible to go further, make a further inquiry into nivritti marga, means the path of salvation or the path of renunciation. And of course, how can a person be spiritual unless he is pious to begin with, right? So that is why the pravritti marga leads into the nivritti marga. And that is why Maitreya is also asking to, you know, what did Manu do? So for the, especially for the liberation of the fourth upcoming generations, how is Manu, you know, organizing different things now that the earth is back in its place? Because that is one of the responsibilities of the Manu. And when a living entity makes this inquiry into the nivritti marga, that is where, you know, you have all this literature like the Vedanta Sutras, which begins by saying Atata Brahma Jignyasa. I mean, so now is the time to inquire about the absolute truth. And once the nivritti marga starts, then it actually kicks out the pravritti marga. That is why you have the shloka in the Bhagavatam, which says Dharma Projita Kaitavot, which basically says that rejecting all the religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in the heart. So now, of course, okay, now that the even in the Nivritti Marga, so what is this so speciality about Srimad Bhagavatam? Because Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not the only literature for the Nivritti Marga. There is so many other Puranas, there are so many Upanishads also which is talking about this Nivritti Marga. Then what makes Srimad Bhagavatam, which is so special among these things? Of course, one reason, which is obvious reason, which we all know, is that, you know, even though Vyasadeva has compiled so many literatures, but he never really dedicated his literature which exclusively glorifies the Supreme Lord. And that is when Narada Muni instructs that, you know, you compose a literature which exclusively, you know, glorifies the Supreme Lord, and that is Bhagavatam. And that's one reason. But not only that, but also, if you see Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva actually, he compiled all the Vedic literature, and he also compiled, you know, the Puranas and Upanishads for those people who are less intelligent, correct? And, you know, he also compiled the Vedanta Sutras, which is nothing but a conclusion of all the Vedic, you know, all the Vedic teachings. But however, if you see the Vedanta Sutra also, it is not very easy to understand. It's like a small sutra. It is very cryptic. It is, you know, unless you have a purport or a commentary, it is very difficult to understand the Vedanta Sutras. And we can see that, you know, like people like even the Mayavadas, you know, they interpret the Vedanta Sutras, so this, along with the Vaishnavites also. So that means that it can be interpreted in any way, unless you really have a proper commentary. But however, Vyasadeva, he never composed a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. He just gave the Vedanta Sutras, but he never compiled, you know, he never gave a commentary on that one. And that is why he, you know, but however, we can see that actually, that is why this Bhagavatam is called as a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. Even though Vyasadeva himself didn't give a Vedanta, you know, the commentary on the Vedanta Sutras, but he took this opportunity of the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to give his understanding or his commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. So that is why Srimad Bhagavatam is considered as a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And that is why we can see even the previous acharyas also in the Gaudiya tradition. I mean, even the previous acharyas, still Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, they never really, you know, they never really gave a bhasha unless the Govinda bhasha appeared. That is because Srimad Bhagavatam is considered as a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. So that is one of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And also by, you know, for example, by, you know, seeing this like very simple stories which anybody can relate, it like, you know, for example, this pastime of Lord Varaha. It may be a simple pastime, you know, which everybody can easily understand, but however, here we can see that there are very deep Vedanta sutras are being explained, that how Bhagavan as a form, how Bhagavan's omnipotency, omnipresence is being explained, you know, through these pastimes, and how his Lord is the ultimate protector of the universe, and so on and so forth, and how his body is not having any material limitations because his body is Satchitananda. Correct? So all these points are being explained through these simple stories explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is why it is called as a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And the other uniqueness of Srimad Bhagavatam is that, if you see, even though there are 18 Puranas, out of that there are 6 Puranas which are in the Sattva, and 6 are in Raja, and 6 are in Tama. But if you see that the Srimad Bhagavat Purana is being glorified even by the other Puranas also. For example, the biggest Purana among the 18 Puranas is Skanda Purana. Actually, Skanda Purana is having 81,000 verses. Bhagavatam is only having 18,000 verses, but Skanda Purana is having 81,000 verses. And we will see that even in the Skanda Purana, it glorifies the Bhagavat Purana. That is very unique, you know, that one Purana is actually glorifying the other Purana, right? We can see some of the references here. It says in the Skanda Purana that Srimad Bhagavata Syat, Srimad Bhagavata Sada, Swarupam Ekam Evasti Sachit Ananda Lakshanam. Here it says that Srimad Bhagavatam and the Supreme Lord Bhagavan are of the same intrinsic nature, which is Sachit Ananda. So basically it is telling that the Supreme Lord and the Bhagavatam are basically a non-different, and they are transcendental. That is what Skanda Purana is telling. And even in the Padma Purana, it is said that Srimad Bhagavatokyoktoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Evahi. Means, without a doubt, Srimad Bhagavatam is directly Sri Krishna. And it is also said that this Srimad Bhagavatam actually gives pleasure to Lord Hari. Means, Hare Santosha Karanam. Means, this Bhagavatam even gives pleasure to Lord Hari. Of course, for something to give pleasure to Lord Hari, that means that it has to be something transcendental, right? I mean, something material cannot give the pleasure to Lord. If something is giving pleasure to the Lord, that means that it has to be something which is more transcendental. And, of course, there are even further verses. It is in the Padma Purana, it is said that this Srimad Bhagavatam is basically an import of all the Vedas and Upanishads. So, in this way, the Srimad Bhagavat Purana is also being glorified in the different Puranas. And the other uniqueness or the other glory of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that it even rejects the idea of liberation or moksha or mukti. So, this is something which is very unique. I mean, if you see the other Nivritti literature, they're all geared towards mukti, liberation, right? I mean, that is what it all talks about. The final achievement, the final goal of all the Nivritti Marga, the path of renunciation, is moksha. But Srimad Bhagavatam is the only Purana where you will see that it even rejects the moksha. And it establishes that even bhakti is even superior to, you know, moksha or mukti. That is very unique. Because if you see the other paths, like, you know, karma yoga or jnana yoga, the aim is to achieve the liberation through karma or jnana. Basically, these are like alamban. Alamban means like a support systems that for you to ultimately gain the liberation. Once you gain the liberation, you don't need any more karma or jnana because you already achieved your goal. And sometimes, even in the karma marg and jnana marg also, sometimes they kind of like add bhakti into the karma and jnana also. It's like a booster so that, you know, your alamban is even more strong. But even though when they add bhakti also, but their ultimate goal is not bhakti. Bhakti is just to, again, like a support for them to ultimately achieve the liberation. And that is why, you know, all the other parts also, even though when they talk about bhakti, karma or jnana, they are not talking about, the ultimate goal is ultimately liberation. And sometimes it may be even surprising to see that even some of the Vaishnava Acharyas also, when they are talking about bhakti, they are also sometimes, you know, they say that bhakti is ultimately meant for liberation. Like bhakti is not the ultimate goal. But however, especially in the Gaudiya Parampara, in the teachings of the 6 Goswamis, especially Jiva Goswami, makes it very clear that, no, bhakti is also the means, and the bhakti is also the ultimate prayojana also. That is very unique. And so that is one thing which is very unique about Srimad Bhagavatam, that how it differentiates or how it is unique among the other Nivritti literature in the Vedic tradition. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is also, it's a Swata Pramana. Because Swata Pramana means basically, generally Vedas are considered as Swata Pramana, right? Swata Pramana means it is self-authoritative, means it doesn't need any other source to give the authority to the Vedas. No, Vedas are itself authority. it doesn't depend on something else to give the credibility for the Vedas. The similarly, even Srimad Bhagavatam is considered as a Swata Pramana. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam is called as a fifth Veda. Means it is self-authorized and it is, you know, Swata Pramana. And the other meaning of Swata Pramana is that, you know, Jiva Goswami mentions in his Sarva Samadhini that one of the nature of the true Shabda is that it, when you hear it, it immediately becomes self-evident. It immediately becomes self-evident. It becomes immediately self-revealed to the human perception or the human experience or the human comprehension. It is not something which is very difficult to understand. It's like a sunshine, right? When you see the sun, things automatically becomes obvious. Like for example, you know, in the Vedanta, there is a famous story of the You Are the Tenth. What is You Are the Tenth? There's a story which describes that a guru, he's having 10 disciples. And this guru and 10 disciples are supposed to cross the river. And this river is like, you know, this, the current is very strong and they are concerned that, you know, that, you know, one of them may, you know, just wash away in the river. So the guru instructs the disciples that, you know, let's do one thing. Let's count before, you know, we cross the river, and let's again count after crossing the river to make sure that we are all together, nobody is lost, right? And he gives the responsibilities to one of the disciples. And after crossing the river, this disciple will count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then he becomes worried. And he comes to the guru saying that the 10th one is missing. You see, this number 10th one, so one, we lost one disciple. And the guru says that you are a fool, you are not counting yourself. So then the disciple, so you see, means you are the 10th, means, so this is Swata Pramana, means it becomes immediately obvious. The disciple doesn't, oh, I am the 10th, can you prove me that this, I am the 10th, can you show me the evidence that I am the 10th? No, it's a stupid question, you wouldn't ask that question, right? So that is Swata Pramana, means it immediately becomes revealed. It doesn't need any more authority or any other source to add the credibility to it. So in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Swata Pramana. So these are some of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, how it is unique among the other Nivritti literature, and how this question by the Shaunaka inquiring about the Manu is relevant. That what did Swayambhuva Manu do after the earth is established back in its original position? What did he do? Because that's the duty of Manu, to show the path of liberation. Not only the liberation, both Pravritti and both Nivritti Marga also. Okay, thus I like to conclude my class. Thank you very much. Okay, any questions?
Moksha is the Prayojana?
Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya.
Okay. And then I was also wondering, why was the Brahma Purana listed as the first Purana on the Mahapuranas? On the list of Puranas, is there any reason for the order?
I don't know what's the significance in the order. I mean, I don't know if there's any relevance to that.
Those are my only two questions.
I'm not sure if there's any relevance to the order.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Very nice class.